And welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, a podcast where we take two games by the people and for the people and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Killing Time at Lightspeed and Odalisk the Dark Call.
Yes. Killing Time at Lightspeed underscore.
Underscore. Is there no, yeah, there is an underscore there.
Yeah, that,
enhanced
that little
underscore edition.
Enhanced underscore edition, the little typing thing. Cursor.
So I think we should probably actually start with Odalisk, right? Because some spoiler stuff to talk about.
Yes, yeah. Not that there may be spoiler stuff in Odalisk. I didn't beat it.
Yeah, me neither.
But the spoiler stuff in Killing Time is pretty light, but it's one of those games that takes like 45 minutes to play, and if it sounds like something you'd like, you should just play.
Right, yeah. So we're gonna be very brief about what we say prior to spoiler section on that one.
We'll explain the concept.
Yeah.
Nick, tell me about Odalisk or Odalisk.
Yeah, I've been saying Odalisk. It is a it's a platformer released by Joy Masher July 15th of 2015. It's available on Steam. I'm not sure where else it's available, but it is available there. And it is definitely heavily Castlevania inspired. It's very Castlevania, Metroidvania like. With most interestingly, a NES palette. Like, this looks like it could be an NES game. It keeps very restrictive color palettes in each of the levels, and it's good. It's real good.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's these guys. So this is these guys' kind of thing. They have one other game that came out called Oniken.
Mm-hmm.
That is also a I'm not sure what the term you'd use. It's not a demake, but like a modern day NES game.
Yeah, just using the same restrictions you would have.
Yeah, and I don't know how in the weeds it gets with that, because you know we watched that talk by the Retro City Rampage guy,
right?
About like literally doing everything. I'm not sure if this is the case with that. It could be a thing where it kind of cheats. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cheat as much as say Shovel Knight does.
Right. Yeah. It definitely is much more stricter about what palette it does use, and it looks to me like an NES game. It's obviously bigger resolution.
Yeah.
And it may stretch things a bit with the palette it uses in your two sidebars that show your current loadout and your health and whatnot.
Right.
Because I know in NES you're restricted to like a palette per level essentially, and those have a static palette throughout the whole game.
But it does look, it has a very NES look to it.
Definitely.
And kind of play style to it. It's mm-hmm. It's like a mix of, it's the way that I thought of it is it's like a Nintendo Castlevania with Symphony, like, but closer to Symphony of the Night.
Yeah, yeah.
But not Castlevania 2. So right, which is right. Kind of Castle, you know, a NES Castlevania with Symphony of the Night. Like, it is explicitly, you know, you unlock stages in a linear fashion, but you do not have all the items to get all the secrets from them. So you go back through them, kind of make passes to get items and upgrades that change your mobility and allow you to go through things.
Right.
The attack has that kind of, the closest thing that we've done to it on the show is Volgar the Viking.
Yeah.
It's not exactly that. It's less harsh than Volgar. And you have a little bit more, you can mantle, which gives you a little bit, which is when you like grab onto a ledge and pull yourself up.
Right.
A little bit more mobility, but it's still in that kind of like tough as nails platformer mold without being quite as tough as Volgar, but still being tougher than, like, you know, I would say it's like Castlevania 3 tough.
Yeah,
you know, maybe not, and Castlevania tough, but
one thing I like about it, despite it taking a little bit of a separation from the Castlevania formula, is that it does actually have distinct levels and an overworld to mm-hmm. Navigate back and forth to them, instead of one massive map. Which actually works out pretty nicely in making backtracking a lot simpler, because you just go to the map and go back to the previous level, and you have to start at the beginning of that level. But if you remember where something was that you couldn't interact with prior to getting some upgrade, typically you'll find your way back there and get yourself some nifty goodies, you know, maybe a health upgrade or something for your effort.
That's one of my like kind of minor quibbles with it. Is that backtracking to go back to old levels to find those things is a little bit tedious. If you're not, you know, making notes or very good about noting what things, you know, because some of them are generic, some of them make sense, right? Like
mm-hmm.
there's a big block you can't push until you get strong. You get like the strong gloves.
Right.
But some of them are like doors, you know, so it's like, oh, I got a key. Should I go back to this door? You do it and that door is not the right door
right.
For that thing. And it's a little bit tedious to go through the levels multiple times, I think, which is kind of a bummer. It doesn't ruin anything, but it does make me wish that like there were checkpoints within the levels you could warp to, maybe.
Yeah, I think that would be like nice that. Too. And there appears to be, I didn't get super far into this game, but there also appears to be alternate routes out of levels after you get specific upgrades too, based on the overworld.
Yeah, like Super Mario World.
Yeah.
Because it's a little denser than it looks. Initially, it looks like there's like five levels.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a little bit denser, and there's those levels are complex, and you can kind of explore them. That part is fun. The actual combat, the bosses and everything are fun. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's pattern-based, kind of, you know, again, Volgar style, kind of pattern-based bosses. And you get Castlevania-esque sub-weapons.
Of varying usefulness, just like Castlevania.
Yeah, exactly. And they can be used in kind of interesting ways, because they're not always weapons. Sometimes they are used to unlock things.
Right.
Like figuring out, so you get a spear that mm-hmm. kind of has the same arc as the axe, but it's your only way to attack below you. And then when I realized, like, oh, that's how you get into those blocks that are on the ground.
Right, right.
That was a cool moment.
Yeah, the actual usefulness of using that as a weapon is much
suspect.
It's got a like tiny little arc. It goes way high, but right in front of you.
Yeah. So that stuff is kind of a bummer. There's weird, there's like a tiny little bit of Dark Souls in that there are like checkpoints you activate. They're kind of like bonfires, I guess, where you'll come back to life, in that place, but it's limited. Like you have a certain number of items. The big thing, like the reason, so I may, or this is like really on the bubble as to whether I'm going to keep playing it. Mm-hmm. I felt fine stopping it for now, because it's, you know, I got the idea of it. And the story was not like keeping me going. It's like this barbarian who's getting revenge for his village or whatever.
Yeah, village is burning down. There's somebody causing a ruckus. You're traveling forward to find out what's going on.
Is one, I think that like the difficulty tuning and the platforming is a little bit rough.
I agree with that.
Like it's not terrible, but like the stage three, the first two stages are kind of perfect, and I'm like, oh man, this is like the NES Castlevania remake of my dreams.
Right, and then you get that auto scroller in fucking level three.
Which is a water themed level where there's like the water axis conveyor belts, essentially, like where you land on a place, and there's a auto scrolling section where it's a boat that continues to move forward while things get in your way, and you kind of have to platform through it. And it's just like this lack of polish thing, because like sometimes you don't know the background from the foreground.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the big problem with that section.
Yeah. So you don't know what you have to jump over or what you can pass through if you're still on the boat. So that's a little bit frustrating. And then immediately after it, though, is an ice level like super slippery floors. And I'm like, man, the platforming here is not the strength of this. You know, like it is, you have this kind of stodgy Castlevania-esque player kind of avatar movement thing. So it's, but you're leaning into really, really heavy platforming really fast.
With it, yeah, well, and Castlevania movement doesn't play into those like platforming gimmicks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You need a tighter control. Like Mario plays well into that because it's so tight and
simple. Or Shovel Knight.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like there are ways to do it, but Castlevania didn't have like tons of platforming challenges. Like the platforming challenges were like jumping over pits.
A pit of spikes. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't a platformer. This is trying to do a little bit more platforming stuff. And I realized that a little bit later in the game, you can unlock like a double jump, which would make a big difference.
That would make it a huge difference, yeah.
So I can respect that you start out so disempowered and you eventually will get, you know, pretty. But it just like, interfered my enjoyment just a little bit to where it's like, you know, I've got a lot of games to play. And this one, it feels like it's fighting me a little bit. Like,
especially two in a row. That's not nice.
Yeah, it was not what I would have done. And I've watched some kind of play from later stuff, and they do these kind of bad video game level tropes. Like there's like a minecart level that looks like a faster version of the auto scrolling. Like you have to react really quickly or get knocked out of the mine and instantly die. I don't know what the continue situation is. Like if you run out of lives, if you're just dead, like that sucks.
Oh yeah. I keep buying them up, which is the main use of all my money, is to make sure I don't get a game over.
The economy is weird. Like because you end up with a lot of money and not very much to spend it on.
Yeah. Except in lives and more of your sub weapons.
The other like just minor complaint I want to make, and then I'll go back to saying good things, because I do actually like this game.
Me too.
Is that I wish the music was better.
It's pretty. It's not terrible, but it's not great.
Well, it's what it reminds me of. It's the palette, but like so the graphics take the NES restrictions and then use them really well. Like the sprite work is actually very good.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, every creature looks cool that you're fighting. You know, the music uses the NES restrictions. But isn't suited to them. So like NES music, like when you're playing a super hard game like Castlevania, you're going to be doing the same part of the level over and over and over. And the music needs a loop in a really short loop. So they make it like super catchy and good and like driving, you know, like get you pumped.
Right.
You know, the music here does not get you pumped. Like the first level of music is kind of good. Everything after that is a forgettable nightmare. And the auto-scrolling part, like, one of the sessions where I stopped playing it because I got frustrated was literally because I'm like, man, if this was getting me like going, you know, if I wanted to listen to the song over and over while I tried, I didn't want to turn it off and just do a podcast, you know, because it's like, I wanted to listen to the music and check it out for the show.
Right.
And I was like, if this was better, like this would be a motivating factor. And it made me think like, oh, all those hard, like super hard platformers for NES had like, or the good ones had really excellent music. And that's like a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, like Ninja Gaiden, like part of the reason why you want to keep dealing with that eagle is like every time that mute, like the drum start, it sounds like it's really cool. Like gets you going. It could have really benefited from that because, you know, that song on that level is just really mind boggling. Like it's a really dour, like sad, slow song. There's no like discernible melody. You know,
they think they're a Final Fantasy ice level, not a
Mario
ice level.
Yeah, exactly. You need to be a you know, or a Castlevania anything level, because even the first level, which like is not great, like the title theme. I don't want necessarily like it's just small team. It's these Brazilian dudes. Like one guy did the music, I'm sure, and it just I wish that he had that kind of catchy short loops as his focus.
Right.
I think it would have made a big difference because like what's actually here is very good. Mm-hmm. You know, and like say I didn't know what to expect, like sitting down to play it. I'd only heard it kind of recommended. Mm-hmm. And I was really pleasantly surprised. Like, you know, feels good in your hands, good platformer, but
I was surprised too.
You know, it's really good, especially since I feel like we've had kind of a string of stinkers, like kind of mildly good or kind of, you know, medium good games on the show. And it was good to like this is the best one we played for a little while, I think.
Yeah.
But still, yeah.
It's still not quite. Like the problem is that there's someone else taking this recipe and doing it really good, and that's Shovel Knight, and you can't beat Shovel Knight for at least a couple years. Like,
yeah.
There's going to be a period of time where anything that's a Castlevania-like platformer is going to be compared to Shovel Knight, and if you can't exceed it, you're going to sink.
And
like, it's just not going to work out for you.
It's a little bit like harsher than Shovel Knight, you know, so it's got, if there's a little bit of an audience, like the Ghost and Goblins people are going to like this more, you know, because it's got that kind of insane challenge, but it's possibly like an after effect of getting near the end of this Dark Souls 3 season of the show. But like this kind of challenge for challenge sake is not something that's super appealing to me personally right now.
Yeah. I get you.
Their other game that Onikin looks like a Ninja Gaiden.
Oh really?
Kind of thing a little bit more, like it looks a little bit quicker paced. You have a sword, you know, like a faster sword and stuff.
Cool.
It looks pretty neat. So it might be worth checking out, or like Strider. It looks like NES Strider.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So that actually looks like worth, and that's $5. Like that, I will probably check that out over this winter break.
Yeah.
Because I do like these guys. I do like what they're doing.
Right. There is plenty to like about this game, for sure.
For sure. And if you like NES platformers, I think it's an easy recommendation.
Totally. All right. Let's move on to Killing Time at Lightspeed.
_enhanced_edition.
So this was released July 5th, 2016, by a developer called Gritfish.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is this was started as a game jam game.
Yeah, where the theming was the golden age of sci-fi.
Ah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And we picked it up actually as part of a great itch.io bundle, which I hope you guys picked up. I linked it in our Slack channel and such. Unfortunately, it's over now, but it was like $20 all to charity, all to ACLU and Planned Parenthood, and there was just a bunch of developers who threw their games into the pile.
Yeah.
And this was one of them. So yeah, it is a primarily text-based game that simulates kind of a old terminal, but a social media site delivered via an old terminal. So it's like Facebook, but real Lite, right? Facebook Lite. And the story, as it starts out, is that you are relocating to a new planet, and you will be traveling there at light speed. And your one tie to the rest of the world is the social media feed. However, each time you refresh, and you know, an hour or two passes in your time, because you're traveling at light speed, time has gone significantly faster back on Earth. So you get a lot of updates from what's going on in everyone else's world back on Earth.
It's like a minute in your time. Like they say like we no longer have to do cryo sleep. It takes about a half hour now to get there. So it's total. Every minute is a year in your home time, and the game sets off like it's going to be 30 years, but it, you know, something happens.
Right.
And it's really interesting. Like it is. It is, there's not very much gamesmanship to it. It is of the like adventure game, walking simulator kind of thing, where like the game part is how much you want to explore.
Right.
You know, like this could be a short story.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, but you're, you know, it does give it kind of meaningful interactions and in that you're engaging with it the same way you would engage with Facebook. So like,
absolutely.
You know, this needs to be a game. It wouldn't work as a story. I mean, it might work, but it wouldn't work as well. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about this, so other than that concept, which I think is really strong,
absolutely.
Is that it is a way of, so what it's going for and what it kind of does is telling like a sci-fi story in like through a really, really unique lens. Like,
yeah,
it reminds me, you know, when people say like, you know, like the, you know, when the revolution comes, like, you know, when people get most of their news through from Twitter and things like that, like mm-hmm. this is cognizant of that.
Absolutely.
And the there's like more to it that I don't want to get into without spoiling it, mm-hmm. but it's a cool story. Like, it is a cool concept, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The interface is cool. The concept is really good. Yeah. I mean, there's
one of my favorite things. I'm not going to say it yet. We'll get into it in the spoiler section. But I really like how it ends, because this obviously could be, you know, a never ending thing. It's just a social media feed. But
it has an ending.
It has an ending, and they end it in a clever way that is very very smart. Like,
yeah.
it echoes a lot of, you know, real world in a very smart and funny way. So.
Yeah, it definitely has, the game has a point to it. It is an art game in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm on board for, and like, I like, this is also for people who are listening who might take a look at this game who are not familiar with it. This is exactly what we mean by potato games.
Yes.
Like, so I think that this upcoming year, this might be the first time we've recorded since Duckstream. We're going to start doing those games with 2017, like after the break. And I think a good kind of idea is to pair one of those with one of these itch.io games.
Yeah.
That is like a story game that takes about 45 minutes to beat, because it's cool to give these like independent creators some more exposure. Mm-hmm. And I like playing these things. Like,
I do too.
You know,
I love these little, these much smaller storytelling or toy experiences. Is pretty much the sort of thing. This doesn't reflect the toy experience. It's not the same, but the you know, games that don't take very long to get the grasp on because they take one of those two avenues. Either it's a short story that is being told in a game context, or it's a toy that is fun and doesn't. You can either play it for 2 hours and see everything there is to see, or you can play it for 15 minutes and get a good idea of everything it's going for.
And whatever, either way you take care of it, expresses an idea.
Yes.
You know, so like this is games as art. Like, this is, you know, this is undeniably an art project. Like,
absolutely.
You know, and it is and this is a really good example when people say things like, oh, you could have done Gone Home as like a novel. Like, sure, but it wouldn't have been as cool because it's a game about exploring and the player is actually exploring.
Right.
This is something where you could say like, hey, this could be a short story, but by making the player actually go through and engage in the same thing they're doing if they're checking Facebook and killing time, you reinforce that theme by making the player do the same thing the character is doing. And makes it better.
I personally would have groaned at a book that printed out like a fake Facebook feed.
Yeah, shoot me.
Yeah.
Like, I do not need to read your shitty gimmick book.
Right.
Yeah.
But done in this context, it makes a lot more sense, and it that gives its story a lot better.
Yeah.
It works out a lot better in this context.
Yeah. I actually like the soundtrack quite a bit too.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It doesn't, like, you can tell this is a game jam kind of like one man project thing, because mm-hmm. it doesn't loop perfectly.
Right.
He'll just restart in the middle of like nothing. It's like, oh shit.
It just fades out. It fades back in, right? Yeah.
It you know, it reminds me of the games I used to make in Game Maker because I didn't know how to do that.
Totally.
But the actual sounds are really cool. It's super Blade Runner-y.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a really great kind of contradiction with what you're actually doing. Like, it's this very dramatic Blade Runner soundtrack to you checking scrolling through Facebook, like really, really excellent in that respect. But
totally,
we'll get into more kind of detailed thoughts after the spoiler break.
Yeah, so some admin stuff real quick. As always, if you'd like to support the show, support the network, best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv.
Mm-hmm.
And there you can pitch us a couple bucks a month and get some exclusive content. Well, not exclusive content, but you get some early content.
Some exclusive content.
Yeah, the higher up feeds, you can get some special episodes of Abject Suffering.
A mere $5. It's not even the higher up feeds. Yeah.
Yeah. And at lower, you still get access to our Slack channel where you can chat with us and all of our buddies about various shows and games and all sorts of topics. So That's the best way to do it. We're also, if you have any games to recommend or want to hang out with us, we're also on facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade or at Comrade Podcast on Twitter. And there's always the contact form on duckfeed.tv/contact or possibly on checkitoutcomrade.com. I still haven't checked if it's there or not. and if you like the show, ratings and reviews on iTunes and telling your friends is a great way to give us some more exposure, which we always appreciate.
Yep, you said it.
So with that, we'll go into a little ditty here and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about the actual story of Killing Time at Light Speed _enhanced_edition.
Yeah, so the actual, like, the story of what happens, so while you are gone, you're talking to your friends, and there is a rights issue essentially with cyborgs.
Yeah.
And the kind of masquerades, like, kind of starts up as an Oculus.
Yeah, it starts as the technology is people, you know, enhancing themselves, and quickly, at least in your frame of view, moves on to actual full-on synthetic humans.
Yeah, which is cool. Like, that says, you know, that's a, you know, hey, this stuff actually on a different kind of time scale, like, it might seem like this takes forever, but it can be very drastic.
Right.
You know, if you kind of check your perceptions.
And quick if you're not in it, right? Like, if it's not your day to day, you see things at a very slow pace. But when you look back on what's happened in the past decade, you're like, holy shit, all this stuff happened.
Yeah.
And seeing that happen so quickly in this game gives you a really good idea of how fast technology actually progresses, and how that could in the future lead to some crazy shit.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's a big kind of part of what it's trying to express.
Totally.
There's like kind of two other ideas I think it's trying to express. Mm-hmm. One of which I think it was on purpose. The other one, I'm less sure, but you know, probably could have been when this was released and reflecting kind of the anxieties. The one that I like, but I think is really pretty direct, is about, kind of the lack of, like, not lack of privacy, but like the corporatization of our socializing.
Yeah.
This is good. Like, it's as you continue to go, your news stories, which, like, the site decides what news you're getting.
Right.
So, like, it's worth noting that the news feed that you go through is mostly fluff nonsense. And your actual serious things happen, like, usually it's your friends who tell you about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But as you go, the fluff gets more, there's more fluff, and more bots populate your feed.
Yeah.
And more bots and advertisements.
And it seems like from the beginning, the character's following a couple humor users, right? Like horse ebooks equivalent.
Yeah. Like, yeah, a couple bots, but there are more and more of them.
Absolutely.
Like, as it goes, and there are fewer people, and it's not like dramatic, like they're being replaced with robots, you know, even though that's essentially what's happening in the main fiction too.
It's just giving you more and more ads from these corporate posters.
Yeah. You're getting more and more ads. Your friends are disappearing.
Yeah.
Until eventually, like, the ending of the game, which we talked about, is that your entire feed is just bots and ads.
Yeah, it's everybody's moved on to a different social network.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. It happens, you know, all the time. We've all seen the birth and death of multiple social networks.
It actually never happens. Like, people always say it happened, like, once. And then, because people are always just like, I'm going to go to Elo, or I'm going to go to, what's the
it hasn't
one?
Happened for a while. Facebook's been reigning king for the longest time. But, I mean, we had smaller things before
we had, like,
MySpace
and Friendster and stuff, but
right.
It happens very rarely. It felt like, to me, it felt like an Elo thing, but I guess it actually worked. I can't remember what the new one is, the new Twitter thing that people are talking up.
Oh, hell if I know.
I can't remember. The nice thing about it is they're just like, yeah, no Nazis, which I appreciate, but I also, I don't want to give up the user base, and that's always the thing, but
right.
You can't do that, because once an automation tells you that's logged into your Facebook account, as soon as you get it strapped in,
right
thing. So that, like, and just having everybody, that kind of, all of these ways, this is like your vital lifeline. This is your only connection to your past and to your friends and stuff, is now just polluted with corporate messages and ads and bots and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's interesting and is a thing. You know, the fact that, like, every morning if I go on Twitter to, like, talk to people who are friends or fans or whoever I want to talk to, and, like, I have to deal with, you know, advertising tweets. Like, I have to deal with, like, that kind of bullshit. That's a thing.
Arby's making a fucking meme that's getting forced onto my dashboard.
Exactly. Like, I have to deal with Arby's memes, which I...
right.
The most resonant thing to me, and I'm not sure how much this was intentional, but since the kind of strife that's going on in the real world in the game is, it really felt to me like it was dealing with or exploring the kind of helpless feeling you have seeing all that stuff through a screen.
Yeah.
You know, like you're
absolutely, especially with that female character whose name I can't remember.
Yeah. The lady who's kind of the Luddite.
Yeah, exactly. Where everything is compounding and all these terrible things are happening to and around her. And eventually she starts realizing that the best way to not feel those feelings she has about all this stuff is to separate herself as much as she can from the social network that is your only access.
It's literally
to the rest of the world.
These are all your friends that you have in the world.
Right.
You know, this is your only connection. And like she leaves and you can't do anything about it. Like, the game is very clever in that, like, there's no, I don't, other than like some people making some responses, but you are, more or less, inconsequential to these people,
right.
You know, 'cause you're only checking in once a year.
Yeah, exactly. They will tell you, like, will you respond to some comment or some message you got from them? And they're like, oh geez, like that was so long ago. I barely remember what happened.
My favorite one is when, one of the guys, so there's the riots about, like the Cybes, you know, the people who have the cyber parts, and one of the guys goes missing, and your timeline is full of like, man, if anybody sees him, please let us know. And you get a message from your friend, it's like, hey, if you hear about him from one of your other feeds, like let us know. And you like, you respond and you're like, oh my god, of course I will. And then the next time you log in, it's like, oh, we found him like a week later, like, you know, it was fine,
right?
Like this disconnect that comes from engaging in these like elements of activism or watching the world kind of go to shit entirely through a feed,
right?
If it's not the intended, it is an unintended, like really strong message of this, like that kind of helplessness and the way that it is impotent, you know, like the idea that you can go online and you can, you know, support things and post things, but if you're not doing anything, you know, you're not making any kind of change.
Right. Absolutely.
That was really interesting to me to see that kind of explored this way.
The news feed, as we were talking about before, that some of them are clearly just like, you know, them joking about clickbait headlines, and there's no actual article for you to read on a lot of those. But there's actually a lot of really good, like the writing in this game is really good, even though most of the game is expressed through this feed. The actual news articles available are pretty interesting and well written.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about a lot of different things from what's going on in your feed, but there's a lot of cool like technological advances and social issues being discussed, like as just these fake news articles that also update every time. Like they start talking about some things about like the Oculus, which they call it Oculus, but they spell it differently. The Oculus like blue screening on people and how it's actually affecting people's brains and stuff in crazy ways. And none of that's expressed as much in your feed. Mainly the feed is like talking about this separation of people who are getting into this biomodding stuff and the people who aren't. But the actual issue of people versus technology is happening a lot in the news articles, and it's really good.
Yeah. It's happening there. And there's so it's doing a good job of showing the kind of like this news side of it. And then also like the human part of it, because in addition to augments, like there are also people who are like, there are androids, you know, they're robots.
That starts happening kind of more and more as the Oculus stuff starts fading out.
Because it's you know, it ceases to become this kind of like accessory, and that stuff is very direct social criticism. Like one of your friends starts dating one of them, and then there's like a year where she's like, you know, I took my partner home for Thanksgiving and my dad kept referring to her as it, and that's a direct trans thing.
Absolutely.
Like that is literally like a you know, a thing shithead uncles say about 100%. Trans people, you know, and like that's the idea behind it.
Totally.
So it's really like kind of surprisingly human and good. Like it's a
smart commentary in here.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's a little bit, it feels a little bit unreal. The fact that your friends are always talking about the same things. Like, I think there's a little bit, not quite enough, like inconsequential detail.
Right.
You know, but, it's surprising.
It tries to put some in there.
Yeah. There's a decent amount, you know, but it's like, what a good idea. Like it's a, totally. You know, a really, really like, you know, this is like game giant, like same thing with like Superhot or other things we've done that come out of game jams. Like if you can develop that and actually make it more than just like a little piece of software, if you can actually kind of take some of these ideas to their end point, I think you get some really like just strong, like, man, this is a good concept. Like,
yeah,
this doesn't need to be like a AAA, like super huge game, but for just like a 45 minute, you know, time to, you know, way to spend some time, like, it really, really works.
Super good. Yeah.
Very good. Good stuff. I liked it a lot.
I liked it a lot as well. Yeah. All right, guys. I think we'll probably end the episode there. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Yeah. Take care.